Hello.
Sorry, I had my microphone muted.
That's a good start. We're keeping that. How's it going?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, my iMac is dying. I might cut out and have to phone back on my iPhone or something.
Didn't you have a fan on the back of it or something to try and cool it down?
Yeah, so basically my GPU is overheating. I'm guessing because it's a closed system. It's very small, the iMac at the back.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of dust and dog hair in my house because I have a small pug who sheds constantly. So it's probably just full of crap and needs to be cleaned out. But to do that, you have to buy some suction cups and remove the front display. And whilst I'm usually fine doing stuff like that, if I do it and break it, then usually I just go, oh, fine, I'll just go and buy a new one, get it sorted. But I don't want to this close to an Apple event, especially when this one is already quite outdated. It's the original 5K iMac. And so I don't want to then have to buy, you know, the 2015 model when the 2017 model will come out next month, most likely. So I'm hesitant to try and even fix it myself. So instead, I just have a fan utility and I've got it ramped right up all the time. And that's been okay. I mean, it's noisy, but it's keeping it working. But yesterday I was playing Dungeons & Dragons on Roll20 with some friends. And halfway through a fight, it just died and everything just shut down because it had overheated. And so I had to just turn it off and let it cool down. And I think the problem is that I've just plugged in a second monitor, which is my PC gaming monitor, which is 3440 by 1440 pixels, and I think that added number of pixels on top of the 5K it's driving is making the GPU sweat a little bit harder than it was. So it's really just a case of waiting until next month, hopefully, when there'll be new iMacs, and then I can buy one as soon as it comes in, and then it'll all be fine. But for now, it's a bit touch and go every time I do anything.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll ship pretty quickly after an announcement.
That's the other problem. Yeah, I want a VESA-mounted one, and already take 2 weeks. With just like this year's model. Like if I went to get the base model 27-inch with the stand, then you can get it delivered tomorrow. But if you want it with the 4 gigahertz processor and the SSD drive and all that stuff, then that increases it by a week. And then if you want a VESA mount, that's another week. So if they release new ones, then you've got that problem of, oh, and then maybe they're backlogged as well. Because my original 5K iMac took a month and a half to turn up, and I ordered it when it came out because they were severely constrained. Hoping that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it does break down, one option you've got is you can obviously go to an Apple store or whatever and get one. But the other one is to, if you've got an Amazon Prime account, is you can get like a, you know, MacBook Pro or something off Amazon Prime to work with. And then, you know, God forbid something happens to it within 30 days, you could send it back. You know, it breaks or gets replaced or something.
With my Amazon Prime deliveries, all I have to say is they left it in my safe place. Like, no, you didn't. Constantly, the number of times I have to complain about Amazon Prime stuff where they said, oh, I've left it, and they haven't.
Yeah.
Or what usually happens is they leave it at the wrong house. They leave it at someone else's house and say, oh, we posted it through your letterbox. I'm like, no, you didn't. You really didn't. Been in all day.
I know. I had, when we lived, we rented a place nearby, and I used to get deliveries there. And I think Yodel, I'd ordered it was when I started freelancing, actually, and I ordered a nice big monitor, a big Dell monitor. And it was supposed to come, like, you know, Prime. It was next day. Didn't come. And then 2 days later, it still hasn't come. And I was getting these missed deliveries saying, you know, no one home. I think it was something like that. You know, no one answering or no one home. And I was home. I was home all the time. I had a camera. I could see what was going on. There was no deliveries. And it finally narrowed it down. Managed to call them. And, you go through the chat and you end up calling someone. They cancelled one delivery and then sent another one. And it still didn't get to me because it was basically going through the same delivery system. And when the guy finally found it, I think they phoned me or something, he just couldn't find the house. It was dark. He couldn't find the house. And so they just signed it off as no one in or whatever it was, you know, no answer or something. And it's like, oh, my God. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm not sure if I mentioned this one before. The best Amazon delivery story I had was when I ordered a hard drive. So it was one of these Western Digital. I think it might have been a light, not a Lightning, Thunderbolt one. But anyway, it was a few hundred quid. Several hundred pounds. It was a few gig, and it was from my iTunes stuff. And this package came, and it was unusual because, Amazon boxes usually come in Amazon boxes, brown boxes with Amazon written on them. The guy pulls up, opens up the back, and the box he brings out is a sewing machine box, which should have been my first clue. It was a sewing machine box with a sticker on it, with the normal delivery sticker on, all the barcoding and everything, and addressed to me. So my first thought is, okay, maybe a bit of a sexist thought, but my first thought is, okay, my wife's ordered something through my account because she was doing her crafting stuff, and she's, that's logical. So I go inside and I leave it. I'm not going to open it, and then I check my Amazon status just, to find out if anything's been ordered. And I suddenly see in my listing that the hard drive's been delivered. I'm like, no, it hasn't. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll give them a chance here. Obviously, Amazon ran out of boxes and had to use a sewing machine box, or it's some weird secondhand thing that I've been, sold a secondhand thing when I thought it was buying brand new. So
Or
I
one of
open
those
this.
like reseller people where
Yeah,
they're not
exactly.
like official Amazon
It,
people, they just
it,
sell on
ex
Amazon.
exactly. So I open this thing up, and inside is a sewing machine. So it's like, okay. And to cut a long story short, basically, inside was an envelope, and the envelope was Amazon. And it had an invoice or a receipt in there. And this thing was worth 80 quid. So I had an 80 quid sewing machine and expecting a 300 or 400 quid hard drive. So I get onto them, which is obviously a nightmare now because I've signed for it. So effectively, according to the system, this thing has been signed for. This number has been delivered. But the best thing was the envelope had, it was Amazon France. It was Amazon.fr. And it was for a delivery to a woman in Switzerland. That's where it was going. So I had all this evidence, basically, so I could
That's
prove.
quite an impressive cock-up right
No, it was
there.
amazing. It was amazing. And the funniest bit is I actually got hold of her. I found her on LinkedIn. I messaged her, and it turned out it was a gift for her daughter. And so she got onto Amazon at her end, and they ended up all sorting it out. Amazon let us keep the sewing machine. You can keep it. Don't worry about sending it back. And then to cap it all off, they sent another hard drive on the Friday because this happened on the Thursday. And then Monday, when I checked the tracking, it was in Brussels. It had been sent to Brussels from the UK. I was like, what is wrong with you people? And it took like another 3 days, and I finally got this hard drive. But it was just the worst. I think they extended my Prime. They always extend your Prime membership a month to apologize. And I think I got you like a year or something. It was insane.
I always have problems with Prime for pre-orders, which really irritates me. With any computer games, if I buy physical discs or films, so it happened when I bought Star Wars on Blu-ray, happened with a few computer games where they send it via Royal Mail on a Thursday. And so usually with Amazon Prime, they have like special delivery people that come and do your next day delivery. But for pre-orders, they go, oh, well, everyone already gets sort of you're guaranteed to get it on this day when you pre-order, even if you don't have Amazon Prime. So they just send it with Royal Mail. And for the longest time, that stuff would just never arrive on time. It would just come like on the Monday or something like that, and it used to infuriate me to such a point that I would just stop buying games from Amazon. I remember it happened once with Lego Lord of the Rings, and I waited in all day. I'd taken the day off work to play it, and it didn't come. I was so annoyed, and it got to 5 o'clock, and then I just drove into town, went to Game, and bought it in the shop for like £10 more. And then when it finally arrived on Monday, I sold it on eBay and just gave it like a 100% charity donation to some video game charity, and then told them it didn't turn up, so I got a refund for it as well.
Yeah, I used to get that with Royal Mail because we're actually in a weird situation. We're right on the border of Hampshire and Wiltshire, so it's sort of potluck where which sorting office stuff goes to. So for quite a long time, it seems to be fine now, but for quite a long time, our post was go it was routed to the wrong place, and it was going to, I think it's supposed to go to Andover because we're technically Andover, even though we're 6 miles away. But it was going to Tidworth, which is in the other direction, about 3 or 4 miles. And basically, sometimes it was just random whether that would get delivered. Sometimes the Tidworth delivery people would come this way. They'd deliver to Tidworth, they'd go a bit further, they'd come into here and just deliver. But most of the time, it got to the point where it was all just being rejected. and it was ending up going back and then being routed back through Andover. And so I had the same thing where just anything I ordered, if it said Royal Mail, it was like it had joined Yodel in being like, oh my God, I'm never going to see this. But do you remember with the stuff with Apple? Apple have that weird thing where they have the sort of delay delivery partners, Syncreon. So they do that weird thing where they ship, from what I understand, they ship from the Apple depots or whatever, the warehouses, and Syncreon take it. They store it, and then they'll usually send it via, UK Mail or sometimes, I think UPS sometimes, but usually for me it's been UK Mail to
I
get to
always
you.
had UPS and then it switched to UK Mail. I think when the Apple Watch came out, the first Apple Watch, so it must have been April 2015, I guess, 2014, one of the two.
So I had a couple of situations with Syncreon where I think it was when the iPad, I think it was the iPad Mini, the first Retina iPad Mini, the iPad Mini 3, I think it was. And it got, basically what happened was it was said it was coming via Syncreon, and I don't know if it was UK Mail, but it was a white van that eventually turned up. But I was obviously sitting at home, working from home. It's an Apple device. It's a new Retina iPad. I'm, looking forward to it. And you know that point, that weird point in the day when you're expecting delivery, where you think this is just not going to happen. I know it's like mid afternoon or it's late afternoon. And yes, they say they deliver till 7 or set deliver till 9, but I just feel this. This is just not going to happen
this
today.
isn't happening.
Exactly. I can't imagine this thing in my hand at the end of the day. This is done. And basically what happened is it didn't come, and it had been signed. So someone had signed for it, but they'd signed. My last name is Neen, Kneen. And the typical mispronunciation is Keen, and the typical misspelling is Keen, Keen. So it had been signed for by Keen, Keen. And I'm like, and that again, that gut-wrenching feeling when you think, great, gone to the wrong house. I've got this delivery. I've got this delivery. Look at the box. Says Apple on it. Yeah, I'll take it. What does it say? Kaneen or Neen? I'm going to just write that down, and they misspell it. So I just thought, great. So I contacted Apple. They looked into it. It turns out, basically, without them admitting it, that the driver had just signed for it because
Yeah,
they
I was going
wanted
to
to.
say, I would have assumed the driver took it.
Exactly. They wanted to. Well, he didn't take it. What he did was he signed for it because it was coming to the end of the day, or he didn't want to do the delivery. So he signed for it to say it was delivered, gets it off the system, and literally 8:30 the next morning, probably before his other deliveries, this white van pulls up and he gives it to me. And it was like, but it took, an afternoon of phone calls. Because basically I said to Apple, look at every single delivery I've ever signed for. If it's come to me, I'm not going to misspell my own name. So clearly something's going
No.
on. But it was fine. But it was just one of those, another one of those sort of gut-wrenching moments where you think, because it's not even the fact that, it's not the fact that you've lost it and you've lost the money. Because there's always with any of these things, if it hasn't been delivered to you, that was a difficult one maybe because it was keen, but there's ways with cameras and all kinds of other stuff that you can prove that things didn't happen. And the majority of the time, these companies like Amazon will believe you. So I wasn't worried about that. It's just that frustration of, dealing with it and having to call someone, and then the fact that, if you've pre-ordered this thing. And you know what Apple are like. You order it, and you try and get it on the Friday. You order it on the Friday to get it for the next Friday. But if anything goes wrong with that delivery, you're not going to see that for a month, because
No.
you're now back in the backlog. So that was the sort of gut-wrenching bit.
My UK mail driver is really weird because I used to have Apple always used to deliver with UPS, which was great because UPS, I'd get a notification to say it was coming, and I don't think they did a 1 hour window. That's DPD, who are by far and away the best delivery company in the UK. I love getting DPD deliveries because you get nice text and email to say it's coming at this time. But UK Mail, the guy always is really begrudging at the fact that he's a delivery driver, especially when it's an Apple release day. Like he turned up with my Apple Watch, he's like, "You won't believe how many of these bloody things I've delivered. I can't stand bloody Apple." I'm like, "Oh, right." And then when he brought my iPhone, obviously I order a lot of stuff, so I've got like multiple iPhones, like the iPad Pro, a pencil, cases, all this stuff. So it's about four boxes. And he's just like, oh, bloody Apple, that's so useless. I love my Android phone. And just started going on about his Android phone. And I was like, you do
Brilliant.
realize that that van, he's like, this van's full of fucking iPhones. I was like, if it wasn't, you wouldn't have a job.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
I don't understand. But then he spends like 20 minutes chatting to me. And so he's like, oh, it's so busy. I've got so many of these watches to deliver. It's the busiest day of the year. All these stupid Apple watches. I'm like, maybe you should go and deliver them then, rather than moaning about it to me. Because I don't care. I just want to play with mine.
Yeah, exactly. DPD are good. So, I like DPD. I like the fact that you sort of, you know, you usually get the same driver the majority of the time.
Yeah.
So I haven't had
My wife thinks I'm having an affair with mine because I know her by name. So obviously it's like, Hayley is delivering your thing. And I'm like, oh, Hayley's coming today.
Exactly.
And then as I speak to her so often, because I get so many deliveries of stuff, like you sort of chat to her as she turns up. And I was saying to my wife, oh, she's moaning at us that we've not trimmed the front hedge. She like made a joke that like to get through the house, she'd like squeeze in to get through. And she's like, why are you chatting up the DPD driver? I'm like, it's not like that. It's just, you know. But I always get really excited because if ever I get a DPD thing, it's usually something expensive. So I'm always like, oh, Hayley's coming today. Yay. And she's like, why are you getting so excited about the DPD driver?
Yeah, and I love the fact with the app now, you can sort of see the, you get a window and you can see the position, you know, in terms of where they are in deliveries. But before the app, I can't remember the guy's name now, but there was this guy that was always the driver that would deliver my DPD stuff. And every morning I end up going down this lane, this long lane down by the side of the house, down to a farm with the dog. And, you know, before the app, you used to get the notifications. But with the app, you sort of can say, I'll leave it around the back. And, you know, once you get to know them and everything and you sign off on the terms and conditions, tick box or whatever, they'll just stick it around the back. It's not a problem. But this was before all that. So I think I didn't even have a window. There was no delivery window. So I just knew they were coming. It was out for delivery. And I'm running down the road, and the next minute there's a DPD van behind me, and sort of I'm sort of aware that there's a vehicle behind me. I look around, and he sort of flashes me, pulls up next to me, and it's my driver. So he's come so often, he knows that I go out in the morning. He's obviously come during the time when I'm out, or he's come later and I'm running later or whatever. And he knew where I was because I think he's seen me a couple of times when I've been running. He's sort of driven past me. So there was just that registration that I was probably on that road. So he drives down, hands me this package. It's like, thanks. Drives further up, turns around. So he just did it, you know, just to find me, then drives off. He's done that delivery and I had sort of finished the run with this package. It was awesome.
So I had a Yodel delivery guy ages ago and he used to come out quite often because he used to deliver the Amazon packages at the time. And I remember once, I can't remember what I was waiting for. I think it was a hard drive or something computer related, but I really needed it. And I'd gone out stupidly in the morning and then I got back and I'd probably been gone for like 5 minutes and I came back and I just saw the little card and I was like, oh no. But as I'd been driving back home, I'd seen him parked outside the spa that was down the road from us, that little corner shop thing. And so as soon as I opened the door and saw the card, I was like, oh, shit. And so I didn't even read it. I just grabbed it, jumped in the car, drove over, and I blocked him in because he was trying to leave. And I blocked him in. I jumped out. It's like, stop, stop. I waved my card at him. And he's like, hey, Ben, you all right? And I didn't realize he knew my name. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, this package, can I have this package? He's like, did you read the card? And I looked at the card, and it said, I put it in the green bin.
Nice one. I've had that with a couple of delivery drivers. I think it might have been UPS. And we were camping. We'd gone away camping. It was another iPad delivery. It might have been at the iPad Air or something. Typically my shipping thing came in that it was being shipped while we were away. It was actually the day before we were driving back. I think we were back on the Friday or the Saturday, and it was a Thursday it was delivered. And Thursday here is recycling day. And you sort of it alternates between cardboard and, you know, every week it's either cardboard or it's pots, cans and glass and things. And this thing had been signed for. And it had been signed for by a name like Smith or something. You know, it wasn't my name. It wasn't anything to do with us. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I've got this whole situation again. It's been signed for. And it was a UPS delivery. I get back. And luckily, so the first thing I do is just check the bins, because it's happened before where we found stuff in the bins and they'll stick it in the recycling bin or whatever. And he put it in the bin with the, it was one of those little black things with the cans and the, you know, bottles in and stuff like that. And I open it up and there's this box sitting there. Oh, thank God. So I grab it. And, you know, what's happened before is we've got back from holiday and our neighbours going, "Oh yeah, I took your recycling out, or I took your rubbish out for you," and we'd be like, "Oh great." And all I could think of was, "Oh my god, if this has been signed for," I'm thinking, I'm giving the driver the benefit of the doubt, thinking, I bet it's the driver who signed for it, because I get the same UPS driver, the same guy who delivers all the same Apple stuff. And he's always commenting, and he's always, you know, he's actually the opposite. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm doing loads of these today. It's awesome." And I thought, I think he might have signed for it, but if he's left it in the recycling and the neighbours do a good deed, could you just, it's that look on your face when they're like, "Yeah, thanks for taking the bins out and throwing away an £800 iPhone that's now gone into a recycling system where it will never even could be, you know, no one will go, oh, what's this? It'll just go through machinery and that'll be it. It'll never, yeah,
especially if it's cardboard day.
exactly. So yeah, there's been some stories with Amazon. I think it was Royal Mail, where they did leave stuff in the recycling, and you know, I'd reported it gone. It was I think it was some Minecraft stickers I'd got for the kids for their rooms or something. So they were in tubes. And I went out into the recycling to get rid of some cardboard, opened it, and there was a couple of tubes there, and I'm like, what the hell's this? And they had tape on them. You know, they had the ends on, they had tape on, which is like a bit weird. So I lift them out, and there's some weight to them, and it was these two things that had not been delivered. They just put them, but there was no card. There was nothing to say. So, you know, always now when I'm expecting deliveries, I'm just like checking these things, because, you know, they leave them all over the place.
Yeah. Can't wait for the day when we finally get drone deliveries and we don't have to worry about all this anymore.
Yeah, did you see that? There was a video, I didn't read the article fully, there was a video last night, UPS testing some van that had a drone in the top.
Oh, cool.
Which was, it sounded cool, but it didn't seem very autonomous, you know, the way they were talking about it. It was autonomous, but they said, like, you know, the driver can monitor it, the driver can correct it, the driver can bring it back. And you're almost thinking, you know, if you've got the driver sitting in the van looking at the screen with this drone that's just going up in the air, flying along, dropping something down, it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be quicker, but it just feels like maybe the driver should just be driving around and delivering stuff. It's probably easier.
Yeah. I guess with that, you could put it like in someone's back garden without them having to leave the back garden, gate open and stuff
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. I mean, the cool thing I saw, obviously patents, you can never believe anything you see patented because all kinds of stuff gets patented. But there was that thing that Amazon had patented where it was the airships, which sounded quite crazy. So floating, it was a couple of weeks ago. So basically floating warehouses that are big airships that would be sighted. I mean, it would be like something out of a weird dystopian film or something.
Sounds like Storks.
Yeah, these huge, the film exactly. Storks. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So these huge airships sit above big cities, and then smaller airships or smaller, yeah, they I think they were smaller airship vehicles would go up and restock them, and then small drones are released. You know, like some, almost like something out of the Matrix, where all these things sort of fly out and zoom off. But yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Actually, it's exactly like Storks. Package delivery,
just a flying warehouse,
which sounds insane, but also sounds amazing for, you know, you get those salvage situations where stuff washes up on a beach. Can you imagine if one of these airships goes down? The London airship starts sinking, and nobody is evacuating the area. They're just standing waiting for stuff to crash and see what's in it. Well, I got my Beats X got delivered last week, I think it was. That was a UPS delivery. Yeah, it was last Monday, I think. So they're nice.
Those are the ones that have the cord between the...
Yeah, I mean, they're not as much... Yeah, exactly. I thought, you know, looking at the photos, it's probably my fault looking at the photos, I thought that the cord was more of a cord. You know, it was like the Power Beats 3. So it was just a sort of connection cord that goes through, but it's sort of got this rubber element to it. That's like a sort of, I don't know. It feels
like a band type thing.
Yeah. It's got this sort of rubber band that goes around the back of your neck. And then you've got the sort of two little pods, which have obviously got all the tech in them. And one has got the sort of switch on it. And then one has got the, actually it's a lightning charger. So it's not a USB, a mini USB, which is what the Power Beats 3 are. So basically it's a lightning charger. So yeah, you've got these two pods, and then you've got the little mic spot on the left, and then you've got the sort of in-ear headphones, which are, I mean, I'm wearing them now to listen, and they are quite freaky because they're unlike, you know, my AirPods are nice and they have a good fit, but these things really seal your ears. So you sort of get this, I can sort of hear my voice inside my head type thing, you know. But they're really good for sort of soundproofing and just, you know, blocking everything out. They're nice. I mean, I like them. I use them sort of at my desk, basically, just for stuff like this. The only thing I don't like is I think the cord's too long. It's almost like designed for someone who's got like a 2 foot neck. That's what it feels like. So you, the sort of cord comes from my shoulder, and rather than sort of just go, or not straight up, because that wouldn't really work, but, you know, just like a little slack, it's got like a real bend to it. So they really come out like a big C shape, you know? And you can see it on the website when you look at the photos. So, you know, I'm not complaining, but it's just that the Powerbeats 3 are feel nice around the neck, although they are a bit too short, so you get that sort of pulling. And I don't get that. I don't get that with these. You know, I can completely move my head, which I guess is why they've done it, because I think so. A lot of the photos is all people in gyms and things like that, and so you might be moving your head a lot, you might be jumping around a lot. But they don't come out your ears. You know, they're a good fit, and a W1 chip again. You know, you pop them open.
How does that work in terms of pairing? Because obviously with the AirPods, you just open the case, that's how they pair. So how does it work with these? Because they don't have a case, do they?
Exactly. So they're like the Powerbeats 3. So you basically hold the power button for like a second, let go. The little light comes on. It's got a little light on one of the pods, and then it just slides up again, just like the AirPods. Hit connect, you hit connect, and then it's on all your devices. And the one thing I noticed with these, and I hadn't noticed it with the AirPods, probably because I just didn't have them in, but I had these on around my neck, but I had them in. Usually I have them just sort of dangling unless I'm using them. And I had them connected to my computer. So I had them connected to the MacBook Pro because I was doing calls or whatever. And then the phone went. And somehow, I don't know whether the MacBook had lost the connection or what, but basically the phone sort of overrided and the call came through on my Beats, which was quite cool. But I don't know if it was a flaky connection or an issue with the MacBook. But, you know,
do you have like the thing set up on your MacBook where you can route phone calls through it?
I think I did have that, and I might have turned it off because what I had, the way I had it set up was I had it on all my devices. And it was a complete pain in the ass because basically the call would come in and literally four iPads, my iMac, which I use sort of to watch films on, my MacBook, my phone, my watch, all of them, you know, start going crazy. And it had that horrible delay. So when I actually answered the call, stuff kept ringing for about 3 seconds. So you're like going, yeah, hi, sorry, hold on, yep. So I ended up turning it all off. And I think I turned it on for a couple of devices before. But do you use that?
No, it irritates me. I mean, to be fair, I'm always, especially now I've got the Apple Watch, I've always got something that can answer the phone. I love having the Apple Watch specifically because I always miss phone calls because my phone, I never have it on vibrate mode and I never have it on loud. So if someone rings, I have no way of knowing at all unless it's on my desk and I'm looking at it.
Right.
So with the watch, it's a godsend because if someone rings, then my wrist obviously starts vibrating. And as I think I mentioned last week or the week before, what I tend to do now is if my watch is buzzing, I can go, oh, great, I've got a phone call. I can pick up my phone and answer it. But if my phone's not near me, I just answer it on the Apple Watch and then I go and find an AirPod and put that in, or I go and find my phone and then transfer it over to the phone. So I've never really had a need to have phone calls on the Mac or any other device. Like I don't want to answer phone calls on my iPad or on my Mac, to be honest, because if I do that, then it's going to come out the speakers and you're going to hear yourself, especially with this microphone that picks up everything. So it's not ideal to have it. I mean, it's a useful feature. I can see why they did it. And I did use it for a little while, but now I've got the watch. It's like, why would I use anything else?
And when you're doing that with the watch, are you still within Bluetooth distance or is that doing it through the Wi-Fi?
I've no idea.
Because it has that
probably varies.
Yeah, it has that capability. I can never be sure. It's almost like it would be nice to know when my watch is using the Wi-Fi, because there's certain situations where they say that, you know, if you're on a known network and you're away from you. Because I've left my phone in the office and gone into the house, which is, I don't know, probably about 80 feet or something like that, 80, 90 feet to the house. And my watch started ringing, or my watch has received a message or something. Now, I guess with the ringing, if it's not a VoIP thing, then obviously it must be connected through to the phone somehow. Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe it's not, because it's using the same technique as the MacBook. But it would just be nice to sort of know what it's doing. You know, when I go into an app, is this actually using the Wi-Fi? Because that would be quite cool to know. I know probably most people don't want to know that.
Yeah,
But
I'd imagine they won't change that because I guess the whole point is that it's seamless, that you should never know
yeah.
which is, because it doesn't matter. I mean, maybe when they get to a point where there's a 3G chip in the watch, then there'll be some sort of icon to show whether it's connected to
Yeah.
3G or Wi-Fi, perhaps. But then maybe not.
Yeah,
Maybe they won't need to do that.
it's like with the, you know, the Wi-Fi calling, because Three have now enabled
Yeah.
that finally, so I've got Wi-Fi calling. And it is, you know, it's seamless. Whether it's using it or not, it's seamless, because there's no indicator. I just get calls, and I don't know how they're coming in. My wife's got O2, I think it is,
There should
and we've.
be with me for Wi-Fi calling. There is an indication because it shows you whether you're connected to, like at the top where it has the network.
Yeah, that's what my wife's
So
phone does.
mine says 3 Wi-Fi call because I'm
Oh,
connected to
okay.
3. So if your signal isn't good enough, then it switches over. Oh, that's me. Sorry.
Oh, there you
After
go.
going on and on about how I don't have my phone on loud, I do because I was just writing a review for a game and I was testing the sound.
Oh,
So.
yeah, I do
And
get
my
that.
phone on, not on silent. So if you go to a place where there is no good signal, then it'll switch to 3 Wi-Fi call, and that's when you're using the Wi-Fi calling. But if you've got a good signal, it'll just work.
I've just done it. I've just gone to airplane mode and put Wi-Fi on, and it comes up with 3 Wi-Fi calls. So it does. That's cool. Okay, that's nice. That's another thing I've learnt today then. That
Because in my
the
house, I get like hardly any mobile signal at all.
I get terrible signal, yeah.
And it used to
It's
always
that
be a problem because my wife would ring and it would just go to voicemail and she'd be like, "Why aren't you answering me?" And it's like, "Well, I didn't get the voice call." Like, that's why you should always FaceTime me, because if you use the FaceTime audio call, I always get it and the sound quality is better. So I've been trying to train her to FaceTime audio call, but it's not going well. But now that the free Wi-Fi call is working, it's much better.
We have a. I don't know what the. I'd love to see like a Wi-Fi map, like a real-time Wi-Fi map of this area, because the 4G border is basically about a mile each way. You know, we are right in the middle of this zone where you get 3G, and when you get 3G, the 3G is nice and fast. But you know, on the dog walk, I go from sort of 3G to no signal as I go further down the road, and then as I get to the top of this hill that I walk up, I get 4G. And it's like quick download stuff, and then it sort of peters out and goes back to 3G. And if I go to Tidworth, which is in the other direction, I get 4G. You know, so if I go shopping in the week, I get 4G signal. So we are, you know, that sort of Wi-Fi, oh, not Wi-Fi, the 3G, 4G is sort of shining, and it's almost here, but we're just sort of in that spot where they're all coming together.
So
But
we've got
yeah.
no 4G at all here, because I'm in a little village in the middle of nowhere. But if I go to like a main town at Leicester or something, I get full 4G and it's great. But the 3G is fine. I mean, as soon as I get outside, it's absolutely fine. It's just it doesn't seem to penetrate the house for whatever reason, which is a pain. I wanted to get, well, previously when I was with Vodafone, I had one of those devices. I think they call them like a Thermacell or something like that. I can't remember the exact name, but it was like a thing that you plugged in and then that basically generated a 3G cloud in your house through the Wi-Fi. So it basically did Wi-Fi calling, but via a accessory that you had to buy.
Okay. I heard about
And
that.
EE did that as well, but 3 never did. So it's nice that they've got that now. I mean, I don't really get phone calls. I don't like speaking to people. So it's very rare that I get calls anyway, or certainly calls that I want to answer. So it's never really been a big issue for me. But it's nice that it works now, especially now that you don't have to use that stupid app to do it. It's like
Oh,
there's no
God.
point having Wi-Fi calling in an app because it's great if you want to make outgoing calls, but it's no good for receiving calls because unless you've got the app running, it doesn't work.
Exactly. And the other thing that was annoying, and I know they couldn't probably do anything because there wasn't an API, or there isn't an API to be able to interact with messages. But it took over my messages. So I'd expect some text. You know, I usually get a text message every morning from the bank, like an automated thing, and other status messages from things. And I was thinking, hold on. And I remember having to look up something. I was having to look up payments for something. And it was like, hold on, I didn't get a message that day. And then it was only months later or weeks later, I go into the Three app and go into messages, and I see like new messages. And it's routed all my damn messages into that, which was very frustrating. So yeah, it was a nice surprise that they'd finally gone Wi-Fi calling.
It's like those voicemail apps. I just really wish that they would just implement visual voicemail because visual voicemail was what sold me on the original iPhone.
Yeah.
Like they did like a product video. I didn't watch the announcement. I watched an hour-long video on their website, which showed you all the features of the iPhone and how it worked. And there was a guy who was dressed like Steve Jobs, but wasn't Steve Jobs, showing it off. Just informational stuff, really. And I sat watching it, going, this is amazing, this is so cool. And then it got about 25 minutes in, and then they showed visual voicemail, and I was like, yep, buying this now. That looks amazing. Yeah. And so it's been gutting ever since I've not been on O2 not to get that. Allegedly, the reason for it is it costs a huge amount because Apple charged something like £1 million to give you the infrastructure to put it in. That's the reason. It's not them being lazy. It's just the fact that Apple doesn't let people use it for free, which I find bizarre. I don't know if that's still true. It was certainly true when the network started opening up. Because, originally we only had O2, had the iPhone.
Yeah.
And then they slowly added more people. And that was true then, but I don't know if it's true now. But it's a pain because three are oh, we can use our voicemail app. And it's terrible. And you have to dial the number and redirect everything. Yeah. And mine didn't seem to work, and then it started breaking. So every time I restart my phone, call divert is on, and I have to go into settings. And then if I go and look at the call divert setting, it thinks for a bit and then turns it off automatically. And it's should never have buggered around with this. And our mutual Twitter friend Luke recommended some service to me, and that was the same. It was just awful and rooted everything through them. I don't get voicemail, so I don't really care that much. It's not like I don't use my phone for work, and I don't take calls from clients. But it's just a pain when I do have a missed call and there is a message, not to be able to just tap and hear it instantly without going through 20 seconds of number 0123 call today at 7:54 p.m. And then you hear the first second of it, and go, oh yeah, delete that. And then it goes,
yeah, exactly.
Cannot delete messages until you've listened to at least 3 seconds. It's
my God.
I hate it.
I use an app called Hello Mail.
Yeah, I thought I tried.
Yeah, it's not bad. To be honest, it's one. I've just loaded it to check it. There's loads of numbers in there with little red dots that haven't been listened to or whatever. Sort of going back to December. So I'm obviously not a good voicemail user anyway. many are for my wife, but normally I don't listen to messages anyway and just phone her back or whatever. Have you listened to the message? Nope, not at all. Great, so I've got to re-explain it all. I'm not a good... I don't like phone calls either, husband. Actually. I mean, I have got my number. Yeah, husband. That as well. I actually got a new Skype in number that I managed to get a local number now, which is quite nice. So all my website number basically goes through to Skype. And I get a few calls. Typically, it'll be, a quick inquiry and then arrange another call or ask for an email or NDA or whatever it is. But finally, I managed to get an 01264 number, which is an Andover number. Which I think only happened in the last few months because I was a London number, which was always confusing for people.
So I have a London number.
Yeah, can we meet up? We're in Notting Hill or something. It's great, I'm about 4 hours away. So I can't do that really. But that's quite nice. And it hasn't affected anything. I actually thought I did that thing, with the odd SEO thing of updating the website, thinking, God, if I change this, am I not going to get inquiries now because people think I'm not, because they know I'm not in London? Is it?
Yeah.
And I actually did it and just thought, whatever, bollocks, and updated it. And the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks since I've done it have been mental. I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether people are trying to spend money or something, but I've had a huge amount of inquiries and really good ones. Quite a few bad ones, typically. And a guy that hit me up on Twitter with some weird way of talking to me and calling me bro and all this stuff. But I didn't respond. I didn't respond to the direct message just because I didn't see it or whatever. And it went from, hey, bro, got a great idea. You up for a chat sort of thing. And then literally an hour later, oh, so you're not then. That's a shame. It was a great idea sort of thing. And it's what? You're having a conversation with yourself. I haven't even responded. So I just blocked him.
This is why I don't have open DMs and why I don't have my phone number on my website.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally have a Skype in number. So on the very rare occasions where a client wants to phone me and insists on phoning me, then I don't have to give them my mobile number. It's the only reason I have a Skype in number. And it's worth it for that. I mean, I hate the idea of, I used to give clients my mobile number, and then after a few bad ones where they just constantly ring all the time, it's like, no, exactly. I'm not doing that again. Never again.
Yeah, I mean, I know it. I know I can sort of put myself in the situation of clients, you know, where you want to be able to speak to someone, but it's that whole thing of, and I don't want to be suddenly equating us to brain surgeons and things like that. But, you know, when you are in the middle of a session and you are coding or whatever, or you're thinking and you're trying to solve a problem, it's, you know, getting some phone call. What frustrates me is I don't mind phone calls that are unplanned, that that serve some sort of purpose, or you know, if it's basically someone asking for a status of a project, or they're asking for some information and that information's already freely available through an email I've sent, or a tracking system I'm using, or something like that. You know, they can go onto Trello and see the status, or they can go onto, you know, Harvest or whatever and see the hours that have been done or whatever it is. Then it's frustrating because you're getting a phone call and all you're then doing is just saying exactly the same information again. That frustrates me. So phone calls that have no purpose, it's a bit like meetings. You know, if sitting in a meeting for 2 hours and nothing, you come out of it thinking that's achieved nothing except wasting, you know, loads of people's time. But unplanned phone calls, I don't mind too much. And the inquiries and you know, phone call inquiries, I probably get one or two a day, so it's not that destructive to time. But yeah, when you're right in the middle of something, especially when you've broken something, something was working, you decided to refactor it, it's now badly broken, and you're trying to get your head around it, and a bloody phone call comes in asking you something stupid, or it's an offshore company, you know, that starts off with the, you know, hello Mr. Jason, how are you today? And you think, right, offshore, straight away, you know, change your pitch,
hang up, block.
Drives me insane. Or that I'm actually on some list somewhere where I've got the I've installed I can't remember the name of the app now, one of these blocking apps that does
the one.
I'm on some weird list, and it's exactly the same girl every single time. She's got a very dreary voice. She's obviously, you know, she's obviously reading from a script, which is why it's so dreary and flat. But she basically, you know, we're phoning you because you've been in an accident recently. It's that whole scam.
Oh, God, yeah, we get those all the time.
I get it probably 2 a month, all from different numbers, whether it's a landline number or a mobile number. Typically, you know, hit hang up, hit block. I had the app installed, but I didn't have it properly configured. So hopefully it's working now. And I haven't had any recently, but they're very, very frustrating.
I don't get many of those on my mobile. I get a lot on the house phone, which is bizarre because I've never given the house phone number to anyone.
That was
it's very frustrating.
That was always the thing with BT. Whenever you got a number, it was like, it was that whole conspiracy of, you know, you guys are giving out our numbers to these people. It's like, no, we're not. It's like, okay, well, I moved to a new house. I'm going to take a brand new number, you know, and actually find out that it's a brand new number. Yeah, this is a new number just for you. And then I'm not going to tell anyone. And then literally a week later, you're getting calls from all kinds of people.
See, I always wonder about that as to whether it's BT selling it or some provider selling it, or whether it's just, you know, I mean, there's only so many numbers. It's quite easy to guess them and just ring them and see if there's any answer, or have a computer ring them and just go, okay, they're all dead. That one's live, type of thing.
That's true.
So I'm never sure about that. One of the funny stories about that is my parents, when we lived on the Isle of Man, occasionally, just in the middle of the night, they would get a phone call from it'd be someone different every time, going, have you got a room available? And I was like, what? This has happened all the time. And then eventually at 2 o'clock in the morning, it happened. And my mum went mental. She's like, I don't have any fucking rooms. Why are you ringing me? And it's like, you're the hotel. I was like, I'm not a hotel. Where are you getting this number from? And he's like, it's written on a sign. Where? On the seafront. And literally, there was an old hotel that had shut down, and it had like, whatever the name of the hotel was, and then the phone number, our home phone number, underneath it. And basically they'd gone out of business, shut down, the building hadn't been knocked down, and then 18 months later Manx Telecom had released the number.
That is brilliant.
So they'd then given an ex-business number to a customer, and we just constantly got phone calls of people trying to get a hotel for the night.
Oh my god. Well, my Skype in London number obviously has a number or two out from being, I think it was the Arab, some sort of Arab, not embassy, but like a travel service. So I would get these phone calls, and it'll be like, are you I need a visa. It's like, what? I need a visa. I don't know what you mean. Is this the Arab travel service? And I'm like, no. Oh, Oh, okay. And occasionally they'd read the number back, and the last four digits would sound the same. But obviously there's a misprint, or they've misread it or something. But yeah, that was always a classic. It's like, I need a visa. What? How much are you willing to pay? I've got a color printer.
See, I get lots of spam phone calls to my Skype in number, but I never have it running. Like I don't have Skype running because unless I'm arranging a call with a client, I just don't bother. So, I mean, I used to have a client who'd always ring, and I just quit Skype, and he'd just ring and ring and ring, and then he'd email me saying, "I've been trying to call, but you don't answer." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't have the phone plugged in unless I have a meeting arranged, so it's always quicker to email me." And they'd try a few more times, and then eventually they sort of finally got them on the path of email me is always quicker.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I say to people with my voicemail message as well. It's like the best way to get me is just email me. I can't stand, I just can't, it drives me nuts when I've got to do unnecessary calls and unnecessary meetings. If I've got a client who says, "Oh, I want to come to your office on Monday or something," it's like, well, what's this? What's the agenda? What are we discussing? Oh, we just want to go through a couple of the bugs. Well, do we need to do that in person? Can we just log that time? It's like, it's not I'm being an ass or anything, or I probably am.
I
But
don't like it
you
when.
don't you don't want to drive for hours to come to me and then have a half hour meeting or even a 2 hour meeting and then drive back when we can just do it over email. And it's weird because you get people even of my age. So I'm 46 and I still and I and that's the way I am. I don't want to waste time like that. But there's still people that I consider young that are sort of, my sort of age or well, middle aged or whatever, but they're not 70 or 55 or 60 or something who still insist on, face-to-face meetings because they want that comfort factor. And I sort of get it in some cases. But like we've talked about it before, there's loads of business that I've got and I've never met anybody, never spoken to them. It's all been done via email. A guy last week who was an email that came in, the guy's in Tanzania. And so there was this sort of dodgy moment where in the conversation thread, he said, "Can you come to Tanzania for 3 days to talk about the app? I'll pay for your time and everything." And I'm thinking,
No.
I'm not being funny or anything, but I don't want to arrive in Tanzania and get sort of, brick across the head or something. I'd rather not do that. Yeah, I'm remote. That's the way I do it. And he's like, "Okay, fine." And so it was all very, okay, this is not serious or
I
whatever.
wouldn't travel to London, let alone to
Yeah,
Tanzania.
exactly. And it was one of those situations where, you're not sure about it. Was a great project size and everything else. I mean, really good project size. It's like a dating app. And it was, and I just basically thought, okay, this isn't serious. And so I just said, okay, here's the sort of budget you need. This is what we need to get started. Here's the deposit I need. And he paid it the next day. It was in my account. It was like, oh, okay. Wow, let's get started then. And that was
That's
done.
always annoying when that happens sometimes.
I know. Yeah, you sort
When
of
you've
call
written
them.
someone off and you're like, no.
Exactly. So
You've
yeah,
not
no
really
phone
read through it
calls.
properly and just go,
No.
oh, yeah, that'll be like 20 days or something. Like, oh, great. And then
Exactly.
you look at it and it's like 30 days. You're like, oh, shit.
But it was like there was no phone call. It was all done via sort of that intercom thing on my website, which was sort of semi email IM type thing, over probably a few hours or probably a day in terms of conversation. No phone call, no video chat, nothing like that. And the guys just dropped, a sizable deposit into my account, which is, pretty trusting for someone who is thousands of miles away. So yeah, I mean, there's just no need for that to go through all that stuff.
I hate it. I hate meeting clients. Prospects that want to have a meeting to tell me about their app. I'm like, no. If you
Yeah.
can't, I don't want to sound like Planet of the Apps, but if you can't tell me it in a 60-second pitch, then I'm not interested.
Oh my God, that trailer, did you see that?
Yeah, I did, Alice.
I mean, I mean, like I think I can't remember who commented on it, but they basically, they said obviously it's not designed for people like us to watch. It's
No.
like entrepreneurs watching Dragon's Den and thinking, "Oh my God."
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly like Dragon's Den. It's
Yeah,
funny,
it's
I thought about this maybe 8 years ago. I thought, oh, it'd be fun to do like a web series because I was getting so many inquiries of people with stupid ideas. And I
Yeah.
thought about doing like a web series. Thought I was going to call it Have I Got Apps for You? And I was going to do like the Simon Cowell thing and have a
Yeah.
couple other people and they'd come in and pitch their idea and then I'd tell them why it was shit and then
Yeah.
they'd go and then just make a series out of it. So I can understand why they're doing it and it's just like of the people to choose to like talk about apps and stuff, it's like Will.i.am and
Oh.
who's the, what's she called? The actress.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
That's right. It's like, I didn't know Gwyneth Paltrow has anything, any knowledge of apps and success, but apparently she
No.
does.
Yeah, she
So,
runs a business or something and has apps or whatever, but yeah.
yeah, just things I never knew.
Yeah.
But on the face of it, you just look at it and go, just the fact that I love the fact that they've obviously gone, right, we need some sort of gimmick. Let's do this elevator pitch thing. And then they're
Yeah.
like, we can't get an elevator into a studio. Let's make it an escalator pitch. And it's just seeing some dickhead going down this escalator going, what it is, it's a mix between Uber and Snapchat or something like that. Oh, for God's sakes, just. Oh, it would be better if the escalator was going into like a pit of fire, like the end of Portal. And if you didn't save them because you want to build their app, you just let them burn. That would be a far more entertaining program.
It'll be interesting to. I'd like to see one just to figure out the sort of flow of it, because it's like, are these people that are, because with the Dragon's Den, it's usually someone coming on either. I mean, there's the ones that are really bad is when they've got this idea, they haven't really done anything and implemented anything, but they think they've got this great idea and this marketing plan, and they're just like, well, why wouldn't anyone
Or
else do this?
they've started it and they've like remortgaged the house three times
Yes,
because they're
yes,
convinced it's going to
yeah,
sell. And they're like,
like.
have you put any money into this? And they go, yes, £300,000. And then they just go, oh God.
But there's always the ones that, there are the ones that have created something, they've prototyped it, they've made it, they've sold a few, they've managed to get into a few shops, they've got some the orders. It's a business, there's some real stuff going on. With obviously app development, it's like, well, if you've built if this the nature of the show is, okay, we're going to invest in you and put a team together to build your app, then do you go in with no app? Do you go in with a prototype? Do you go in with an MVP? Do you go in with a a sort of Envision or a proto.io?
Hopefully it'll be a mixture of those things, I would
Yeah,
think.
I,
But
and I guess the thing that we always get when people inquire with us is like, I don't want to share my idea without an NDA. Even though you say it's Tinder, isn't it? It's Tinder related and it's got some photos in it. Oh yeah, it has actually.
it's a swipe mechanism, isn't
I, exactly. Yeah, there's swiping
It's like
involved, isn't
Tinder
it?
for shopping.
Yeah,
Oh,
exactly.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's like it's a unique app. Have you done anything like it before? No, because it's unique. You just told me that. But yeah, so it, with that, with all that sort of secrecy and worry about it, it's interesting to see people going on a show that's going to be broadcast to people, or on demand or whatever, where they're going to be giving away these ideas, especially if they haven't done an MVP and are not in the App Store. If it's just early days, because there are companies out there that that do specialize in copying everyone else's apps and. And pushing them out. I can't remember the name of the one that was in the States, but its business model was based around, copying Uber, copying Instagram, copying all these apps and getting them out there. So it'll be interesting to see a couple of episodes.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna watch it. I just don't think I can bear. I just can't stand the sort of people that are on it, both the people judging it and the people who appear to be contestants on it. They all just look like massive douchebags.
And
I
isn't it
just
on Apple
can't be bothered.
Music? Isn't it going to be shown on Apple Music, which is also bizarre.
I saw someone quip, well, if they can make a decent sized business selling movies and TV shows through something that's still referred to as the iTunes Music Store, then there's no reason that they can't broadcast streaming TV on a thing called Apple Music.
That's very true. That is very true.
I
It's, yeah, I mean, yeah, that needs to.
mean,
I don't.
iTunes itself is literally the clues in the name.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost like become a brand that's. Not associated with that anymore.
Yeah.
People just call it iTunes, because I guess what would you call it? I mean, would you have separate apps? Would you have,
Well, they do on, well, I suppose they don't for the store, but they do have separate apps on iOS. Like you've got, well, now it's TV, but it used to be, videos.
Oh, so
You had
you could
video
put the
with some,
store in each app effectively, couldn't
yeah,
you?
like you do with iBooks and you do
Yeah,
with
that would make sense.
that kind of stuff. I always thought that they would just unbundle it all. So you would have literally music app, videos app,
Yeah.
maybe like ringtones or something, some sort of sync app for syncing stuff to your iPhone. That's how long ago I thought about this. And then you just do it that way. Books the same, but they haven't. They've resisted splitting it out, and now it's just one massive big mess where you have separate app stores. Because I suppose you've got the iMessage app store, watchOS app store,
Yeah.
tvOS, macOS, iOS, then you've got the iTunes store, then you've got the iBook store. So that's seven stores.
Yeah.
But they're all kind of using the same back end, but kind of not. And some of them communicate with each other and some don't. You've still got some weird edge cases like ringtones where you can't re-download the ones you've bought previously. It's a mess, really.
And have you
I
seen
mean,
the
we could talk for hours about the mess that is
Oh God,
iTunes, but
have you played with the new TV app on Apple TV? Do you
I
usually
haven't.
Okay, so if
I didn't
you
think it was working in the UK. I thought
No,
it was just
it's not in the UK. No, if you log in with your US account, so I buy a lot most of my movies I buy through the US account just because you get them quicker and it's cheaper.
I get all of my TV and movies through what the Swedes affectionately known as going for to IKEA, which is Pirate Bay.
Okay.
I very rarely buy anything like that.
So that's how I'm buying stuff. And what they've done with this TV app, which I guess from commentary and everything on it, is the plan originally was with that TV icon on the Siri remote, was that that's what it was going to do. When you press that, it would go to this TV app, and obviously it wasn't ready or didn't happen or whatever.
Oh, okay. That's
Yeah,
interesting.
that's apparently what it was for. And if you try it now, once if you're in the US mode, as soon as you switch to your US account, the apps rejiggle because certain apps aren't available or whatever. And the TV app appears top left for me. It sort of just pops in. Now I haven't downloaded anything, any apps inside that, because most of the apps, if you try and download them, even though I've got a US account, will do the geo check and say you can't have this in your area or whatever. But now what happens if I'm in a game or something and I hit that button to go home, it doesn't go home. It goes to the TV app. If I switch back to UK mode, then it doesn't. It's a bit weird. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that the bit of the mess that's in the TV app. So the idea, my understanding of the TV app is that the TV app becomes a little hub for all of these other apps. So you would download all HBO and not Netflix yet, but all these other apps. And when you load the TV app, you wouldn't just see a load of icons, which a lot of people say, oh, well, that's all it is. It's just like having a folder. It's not really, because when you open the TV app, you would get, nice paneled previews of imagery or shows or whatever. It's the idea is you're going into it as your sort of on-demand TV service, and these apps are sharing their information with that sort of home screen or whatever. Now, the weird thing is when you go in there, you sort of have that home screen, the TV mode, which at the moment I've got sort of download some apps here or whatever. But there's a library menu at the top, and when you go into the library menu, you're now in a weird different version of the computer sort of iMac library that I've got from the home screen that sort of looks different and is now in the TV app. So you can get to your movies, your TV programs, and all your other stuff, but in a slightly different interface. I'll have to take some screenshots of it. Well, there's probably screenshots around, but it's just odd to me that it's like, well, you're sort of giving me two different routes. Do you know what I mean? I can go into the computer icon down my normal film TV program route, TV shows route,
I see, yeah.
or I can go into the TV app, and maybe it's for convenience, but it's just odd to me that it's even there because it's TV.
Well, can
It's
you
obviously.
still access, like, presumably, if you've downloaded the HBO app, that automatically shows up in the TV app, but can you also just access the HBO standalone app, or does it get absorbed into TV?
I haven't tested it, but I believe you can do both. So I think you can go into the HBO app normally.
So that's probably the reason why then, because you could have the computers, you can use the computer app to look at all of your computer stuff, which probably includes things like photos and
Yeah,
other
exactly.
stuff as well, whereas the TV one is probably just movies and TV shows.
Yeah, I need to try and download a couple of the. Because apparently you can download some of the apps from the UK, and some of them give you some free content that you can look at. It'll be interesting to just see, what it looks like. And try it out. I don't know how it would work over here, or if they'll ever get it over here.
If they
These things
will,
are,
yeah.
it'll be
Well, we
odd.
still don't even have all four on Apple TV, which is, I mean, the two big omissions on the Apple TV for me are all four and Amazon Prime, because I watch a few things on both. So I can get like BBC iPlayer and Netflix, that's fine. But to be honest, I mean, I actually unplugged my Apple TV from my TV. I'm not using it anymore.
Oh, wow.
I have one in the bedroom still. But the only thing I used the Apple TV for was Flex, because I download all of my TV and movies, so I get it instantly. And I don't know. I have an odd thing about TV. I think it's because I was brought up, watching like TV in the UK, which is free apart from Sky. And so I find it very peculiar to pay for something that I'm going to watch once, which is weird because I pay for the cinema. and for like Blu-rays and stuff, but I just can't quite bring myself to pay like £2.50 for a 20-minute episode of South Park or something. And it's like, well, there's going to be 24 episodes in a season, and there's 20 seasons, and the cost of it, I'm like, ah, no. So I tend to still, even to this day, go to go to IKEA to get them. And so what I generally do is I'll download them, and they'll be like MKV files or whatever, stick them on my iMac, and then I have Plex. And so on the Apple TV, originally on the Apple TV third generation, second generation, I had to re-encode them with Handbrake and watch them as MP4 files, put them into iTunes so I could then stream them to my Apple TV. But with the Apple TV 4, I could use Plex, which does the transcoding on the fly. So I
Oh,
literally
wow.
just bung the file in. I don't have to, like previously, I had to add all my own artwork and stuff. Don't have to do that anymore. You just literally stick it in a folder, tell Plex to update itself, and it goes, oh, okay, that's Big Bang Theory episode, season 10, episode 4. Here's the synopsis. Here's a little, proper artwork and everything, and then Plex just shows it and it looks great. So we only ever use that because my TV has Netflix built into it, and that means that it's at 4K with HDR, which obviously the Apple TV doesn't do. So the TV had Amazon Prime built into it, so I can watch my Prime stuff through there. And then my BT box has stuff like all four BBC iPlayer, which I think the TV also has built into it. So I was only using the Apple TV for Plex, and now my TV has Plex built into it as well, which also runs at 4K. So it's like, it's actually easier. And I've only got three inputs on the back, and with the switch coming out, I'm going to use one of those inputs. So it's like something needs to go out of the BT box, which we use for live UK television, the Xbox One, and the Apple TV. One of these three things has to go to make room for the Switch. And it's like, well, the Apple TV is the one that I don't actually use, which is odd because you'd think I would use it all the time, but I just don't. I just don't use any of the apps at all. And all of the video apps are already built into my TV and have 4K. So it's like, oh, why would I
That's
bother?
neat. Plex, I need to check that out. I don't, Plex on
Our
TVs, that
Plex is
sounds.
amazing.
Yeah, I've just deleted a load of old ripped from DVD films from my media library because they weren't playable on my Apple TVs. And as you were saying all that, I'm thinking, damn, I could have probably used Plex to watch those. But I deleted them anyway because they were, DVD based and they're all low res. But just
It's
taking up
great. You just
space.
literally just drop them all into a media file folder, and it just does it all automatically. Like it would go, oh, okay, so this long, complicated file name. Okay, that film is I don't know, 300, and it'll go and fetch the movie artwork, put that up, put the synopsis up. It even does really cool stuff, like it'll recommend other movies in your library based on what you're looking at. So if I put on like Casino Royale, it'll say, oh, here's all your other James Bond movies, because it knows
That's very cool.
what you've got. And so it has that interaction and similar stuff to the Apple TV interface. Like, it'll say actors that are in these films. So you can go Daniel Craig, and then it'll show me in my library all the films with Daniel Craig in and give you reviews. They've even started doing, which I don't know how, but I love it. So I bought Finding Dory on Blu-ray for my wife, because she loves those films. And I'll often buy movies we really like on disc purely because I like to see them at like the highest possible resolution. Like,
Yeah.
download, like, a ripped Blu-ray off Pirate Bay, it's going to be like 2 gigs, whereas a proper Blu-ray is like 50 gigs. So you get a
Yeah.
high amount of quality in there. And so I typically will buy a lot of big movies that we watch a lot. So I bought that for her, but she wants to watch it in bed sometimes. And it's like, well, we don't have a Blu-ray player upstairs, and it's a pain in the ass to then go downstairs, get the disc, put it in, skip past all the piracy warnings at the beginning, and then watch it. So I normally then download it as well. Like, I'll just get a free copy online. And so we did that, and a new feature came up when I was going through Plex, and this was on the Apple TV in the bedroom. I selected Finding Dory, and it had like all the play information and like all the synopsis and that, and then underneath it had special features, and then you clicked on them and it streamed them from somewhere, I don't know where, but it
Oh,
had like
wow.
making of documentaries, interviews with the cast, like the whole, like what you would expect like on a DVD special
Wow.
features thing, but they weren't in my library. It's just like,
That's
don't know where it's streaming them or getting them from, but it's pretty cool. So it's yeah, well worth checking out. I think Plex is free. They have like a subscription model where you can pay if you want to do a thing whereby you have all of your media on your Mac, and then when you're out and about, you want to watch stuff on your iPhone without loading it onto your iPhone. Then it's like £4 a month, and then it'll just stream it from your PC to your phone,
I'll
and it'll
check that out.
transcode it as it does it. So it's
I'll definitely check that out.
worth looking into. But yeah, so I don't use the Apple TV at all anymore. It's just it's gone, which is funny because at the moment I'm building an Apple TV app for a client, so it's interesting testing it because I have to keep going into the bedroom to check it on the
Oh no.
physical one.
Did you
Although
ever do any?
interestingly,
Sorry.
so yeah, go on.
I was just saying, did you ever play any games on it?
Very few. It's like, to be fair, I mean, I don't play iOS games very often. Very rarely, actually, because I've got a PC and an Xbox. Occasionally, like Super Mario Run, I played for quite a long time because I quite enjoyed that. Just sat in bed playing it. I've just played Stagehand for 2 hours, which is that new one from Bitbucket, the people that did The Incident and Space Adventure, I want to say, something like that. So I played that. I've just written a review of that on my website. But that one doesn't work on the Apple TV because you need to, it's touch controls, so it just doesn't work. There's no controller support for it because it wouldn't work well with that. So I played a few games. I mean, I have a Nimbus controller, so I have played a few things. Like I played Sonic the Hedgehog for a little bit, but I already have that on like five other consoles, so it was really just to test it out. I played, I think the one I played the most on the Apple TV was Lumino City.
I haven't seen that.
That's really interesting. It's actually like made out of like they'd actually physically built this little town out of cardboard, like and matchsticks and stuff. And then it's like all stop motion animation while you play it. And originally, I started playing it. I was like, oh, this is cool. And it's a really interesting look and feel. And then I saw the making of video where you can see it's actually a physical, massive thing that they built. So that's really cool. But that's on the iPad as well. So we started playing it on the Apple TV. And then we got to a point where there was a bug and it wouldn't progress any further. And then I tried it on the iPad because it had iCloud save. So you could just resume from where you were. And on the iPad, it let me get past that bit. And so then I just keep playing it on the iPad.
That's cool.
But apart from that, I've not really played many games there. I mean, one game that I always think I'm going to play is Oceanhorn, which is like that Zelda ripoff, basically, because they're pretty good at keeping it up to date. And like when the iPhone 6S came out, they did like a whole, new texture pack to use the improved graphics. They did that again with the iPhone 7. They've had Apple TV support. When the metal thing got announced, they switched everything to metal to make it look better and faster. So it's really good as like a technical demo of what can be done on iOS. But I've only ever played it for about 40 minutes or so because I just don't. There's something about it just doesn't grab me in the same way that other games do. And if I'm sat in bed, like playing something like on the iPad or that, I have like a huge backlog of articles to read. I've got like my RSS feeds and Twitter and stuff. I tend to rather do that in bed on the iPad than playing a game. If I'm going to play a game, I might as well get out of bed and go and play on the PC where I've got much better games. With the Switch coming out as well, that means iOS gaming is going to be pretty much dead to me because if I'm sat in bed, I'll be playing on the Switch. So it's very unlikely I'm going to play many more iOS games after that. And
And
even
that
like
like
out, like it's very rare. Like occasionally, if I'm like waiting for my wife to like try on, an outfit or something, when we go shopping, like you have that whole awkward bit where you have to spend 5 minutes sat outside the waiting room like a child, and occasionally look up and go, oh, yeah, it looks nice. So when I'm doing that, I always feel odd playing games at that point. Like it'd be easy to like fire up Super Mario Run and just have like a little 3 minutes of do-do-do tapping along. But I just find it really awkward because I just feel like I look stupid stood, normally in the lingerie or shoe section of a
Holding a
woman's clothing
phone.
shop, sat playing Mario with my phone. So I tend to just read articles or, read my emails or something. So I very rarely play anything on iOS, Apple TV. Yes.
I've played a few things. I mean, I'm a very I'm sort of casual gamer in the sense that, you know, if I play something on the Xbox, I might play, you know, a longer session on the Xbox One. But if it's iOS, it'll be it's something while I'm cooking, or it's something while something's going on. So it's like quick fire up something. I just have a quick go. The kids loved it with Disney Infinity, which they ended up ditching or not supporting anymore,
Oh,
which is a
yeah.
shame. Because Disney Infinity, you know, we did it the digital version. So I didn't realize we could
Oh.
do I didn't realize we could do that. So I just sort of signed up for that, and they loved it. I mean, it was awesome. And it, you know, the limited gameplay that I had of it, I liked it. But I'm very bad at gaming now because I don't get a lot of time with the kids and everything. And it's just, you know, I can't do like an 8 hour marathon or something like that. I could probably do an hour maybe. On Titanfall 2 or something like that, or COD or whatever. Elite Dangerous I love, but that's the sort of game that needs, you know, a couple. You can spend an hour just flying around looking for something to do, and then it's like
I
done.
tell you what, Elite Dangerous is great for, and I used to play this on my iMac before the GPU gave up, is if I'm on a phone call that I've not been able to get out of, I have these proper big joysticks for Flight Simulator because I used to do pilot lessons and stuff when I was
Right.
younger. So I've got like a full, you know, throttle and joystick and all that stuff. And I set that up, I stick the headset on, and I mute Skype and I just let them talk. And I just sit flying around in Elite Dangerous because there's so much of it is you're not doing anything. You're just, you know, going from point A to B.
Exactly.
And so I'll just do a few runs back and forth between planets and I'll do that. And then occasionally just unmute and go, yep, that's fine. Yep, sounds good. Great. Yep, mute. Carry on flying.
Exactly, yeah.
So you can generally tell how many meetings I've had in a week by how much time I've spent on Elite Dangerous.
I think I may have done a conference call once where I was on Titanfall 2. you know, where I was actually, you know, just it was the same sort of situation. You know, you end up on a lot of conference calls where it's a group of people and you sort of mute yourself. Everyone just mutes until they have something to say, and then you have to sort of scramble to try and find the mute button to
I wouldn't be able
unmute
to play
yourself.
Titanfall 2 with the conference call because I'd be like, if I'm playing Elite Dangerous, I'm not saying anything, so I'm just flying.
Exactly.
Whereas if I'm playing Titanfall 2 and I haven't muted, I'd be like, "Oh, you bastard!"
Exactly. Yes, I've done a few of those where I've screamed out and shouted at people. I'm not even on the headset, you know, you're just shouting at nobody. But it's just that frustration. So so the games I don't play a wide variety of games. I mean, Elite Dangerous I play, COD. I used to love Call of Duty until the latest version, which is just terrible. You know, Black Ops 3 and those sort of things. They're quick win games for me. You know, I can sort of jump in, get in a game. Stick it on hardcore mode, which I prefer, because then you actually get shot and die rather than take 50 shots or unload a clip or something. And just run around and shoot people, and you know, that's it. And you can sort of kill 20 minutes, kill half an hour. And that's what Titanfall's like as well. That's why I like that. But I need to probably try a few other games. I know you mentioned Rocket League a lot, which I've looked up and looks quite cool.
Yeah, I'm up to 210 hours played of Rocket League
Wow.
since last May.
And this is
Play
basically,
quite
it's
a lot.
football with vehicles, yeah? It's like football with
Yeah,
vehicles.
essentially. Yeah, so you can have it in teams of 1-on-1 up to 4v4, but
Oh,
typically
wow.
the only most popular is 2v2, and you can have it ranked or unranked. So
Cool.
like friendly matches or ones where if you lose or win, you go up and down in various leagues that they have. So I typically play 2v2 ranked. And it is difficult. It takes a lot of, like it is a nice pick up and play game, but for the first 20 hours, like it's hard to hit the ball because it's
Right.
just like, it's so, it's not difficult. It's just that other people are going to be way better than you and they can do things like the key thing of it and why it's called Rocket League is that the cars have like a boost ability where they can like speed up. But if you tip your nose up, you can actually like fly a little bit. It's kind of like, it's not very good flying unless you play for a long time and sort of get practiced at it. But I mean, I've been playing for like 220 hours or something, and I still can't rocket jump very well. But there are some people who will see the ball up in the air, and from like the whole other end of the pitch, they'll just boost up into the air for about 10 seconds and then smack it and then hit it into your goal. And you're like, what? How? How have you done
Yeah,
that?
exactly.
It's incredible. And I'm just there going, just trying to jump and hit the ball and just
I
miss
know.
completely.
That's like a lot of these games though. See, and even when these betas come out, they'll release a beta. I remember Battlefield 1 is something I've been playing as well. I like Battlefield 1. There's a theme here, by the way. Lots of shooting, yeah. But you know, you'll get those games where like the beta's just been downloaded and you go on and there's already, you know, probably kids or whatever that are just bloody amazing. You know, just able to kill you instantly and do all this stuff, and it's like so frustrating. The one game I'm now feel that I'm good at, and I usually get good high rankings on in terms of, you know, ending top of the team or second, is Titanfall 2. So I love Titanfall 2.
Titanfall's an interesting one for me because I played the original one to death. Like I got every single achievement in all the DLC packs. I forget how many hours. I'll look it up because I actually have all of this. I have a website where I log all of my game time to the minute. I play on average about 24 hours of games a week.
So how is it getting that? How do you get that for the Xbox One games? How are you getting that data? Is it through their back end or API or something?
Yeah, it's just a private API that you can
Okay.
fetch it. Because on the Xbox One, you can see how much time you spend in the game if you
Okay.
So Titanfall, so the original Titanfall, I played for 328.7 hours.
Wow.
And I got up to Generation 10, level 50, and all the achievements and all that stuff. Absolutely loved it. Played it to death.
Yeah.
Constantly. And then I got Titanfall 2, and I've played that for 39.6 hours, and nearly all of that was in the first weekend of it coming out.
Oh, right.
And I've just not really picked it up since then because it just didn't grab me in the same way as the original one did. I talked about this a lot on, I do another podcast called Connecting to Host with my friend John, where we discuss co-op and multiplayer games.
Okay.
And we did an episode on Titanfall 2 where I go into it in a lot more detail. But essentially, it didn't have the same. Like in Titanfall, there was an achievement for getting Generation 10, and there isn't in Titanfall 2. And there was like specific challenges to get up to that point. Whereas in Titanfall 2, that doesn't happen. You just, you know, you get to level 50, you go to the next generation. So I didn't have like the same drive to want to get to Generation 10. I was like, eh. I
Yeah.
got to Generation 2, and I was like, yep, that's me done.
Yeah, I
I
think
should play more of it though. I do enjoy it, but
the progression of weapons is fairly annoying in terms of like once you've got, you know, to get all the accessories and everything, it's like I've got certain weapons now that I sort of stick to and play with. So I'll either be sniping with the I can't remember which one it is, but it's the rapid fire sniper rifle, or I'll go with a sort of you know, machine gun type thing or whatever they call them, light machine gun, and that'll be my like running around one. And it depends on the map because the nice thing is as the map loads and as you realize what map you're on, you can change your pilot, which is quite nice. So I'll go, okay, I'm not going to do that one or this one. But what I did love about Titanfall 1 reminds I love Titanfall 1 as well. I played it a lot. It reminds me or started to remind me a bit like Battlefront. So Battlefront is, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan, love Star Wars. And I should love Battlefront, and it should be almost something that I play every day, but I don't. And what frustrates me about Battlefront is the lack of any sort of hardcore mode. I can't stand these games where you're sort of firing and firing and firing and nothing's happening, and then they get off two shots and you're dead. You know, okay, they can hit your head and all this stuff. But, you know, if you watch a Star Wars film and a stormtrooper gets hit and they're pretty much dead, they get one laser and they're down. You know, and I'd love to play that mode. I want to play that mode. You get one shot and you're down.
License to kill mode in GoldenEye,
Yeah,
basically.
exactly. And Titanfall 1 felt a bit like that sometimes. I felt like I was really unloading this weapon and nothing's happening. And then this guy, you know, manages to get me. And with Titanfall 2, it felt like the weapons had a bit more power to them. And so I loved that. But I also love the grappling hook and sort of just
Oh, the
got
grappling
really,
hook is amazing.
I just got really, I just, I got lucky a lot of the time, but I got really good with the grappling hook in terms of, you know, being across from another building where there's a window and managing to sort of grapple and fly through the window, or that amazing one that you don't realize you can do until you do it, where you can actually grab the other guy with a grappling hook.
Yes,
And you sort
and
of
then fly
accidentally,
towards them and then kick them.
yes, that is awesome. And what I really love doing, and it's almost given me a sort of second time around in the app, in the game, is finding once I realized in a couple of the maps that you could get up onto these high spots that you didn't think you could get to. So it turns, you know, on some of the maps, you can get on top of these towers and you can, you know, whether you have to grapple twice because you can sort of grapple, fly up, let go, grapple again, or you can manage to get to a spot where you can grapple all the way. There are lovely little spots that you can go to. One of them's got a great map where you can get on top of this sort of radar tower almost. It's like a very narrow tower, but you can actually hit the dish and actually sit on top of this dish. And then you can pick people off almost across the entire map. Now, the problem with it, which again, I'd like to change, is the kill cam. So, you know, I'm a terrible camper with stuff like that. I love sniping from high spots. I'm just picking people off from a distance. And of course, as soon as you take that one shot, you're pretty much exposed where you are. And it's game over, which is a bit frustrating. But I guess it keeps the game moving. There's just
especially in a game
things.
Like football.
Yeah, there's just lovely little things you find. You know, you played it for a while and you think, okay, there's certain maps that there's always a map in a game for me that's like, oh God, I hate this one. Really can't stand this map. But there's certain maps where I've really hated them. And then you suddenly find this like little nook or this little thing about it. And it's like, this is cool. And I get my biggest problem is I've got the elite controller with all the, you know, adjustable buttons and everything.
Yeah.
And I have that I have this terrible thing, and I do this in COD and I do this in Titanfall where I have a panic, you know. It's like Han Solo running around the corner with all the stormtroopers. So I suddenly walk around a corner that somebody's there, and I go to take the shot. But as I go to take the shot, I'm doing it now with my hands. I sort of squeeze my hands and I hit the melee thing on the joystick. So all the other player sees is me suddenly swiping in midair, you know. So this guy's just walked around the corner and I'm sort of swiping because I've just hit the thing accidentally, and then he shoots me and it's like, and it's just like a weird reaction I have. I just instantly hit that button.
I've got the Elite controller. And I like it because you can change the thumbsticks.
Yes.
So my left one I have, I think, is the normal one. But the right one I have the taller one because I find the aim a lot more accurate with that, especially for sniping. Because it's taller, you've got a lot more, I forget what the right word is. And I've set up like custom curves and stuff for the game so that it moves the way that I want it to. But then on the back, I have just, I usually just have two paddles on the bottom. So I have one for sliding and one for meleeing, because I find it really, I use melee a lot, and I find it really hard to push that button in, especially, you know, when you get that odd situation when there's two of you next to each other and you've both clocked each other and you're both trying to kick each other. And have like this weird dance where you're like jumping around trying to hit each other, and it's difficult because obviously the stick that you use to look around is the stick that you need to push in to hit, and so it's quite difficult to do that accurately. So if you have the Elite controller, you can just move with the right stick and then just hit them with the paddle at the back, and it is much easier.
I haven't got the paddles on at the moment. I'd sort of played with them and I just thought I'd accidentally keep
hitting them. Four is too many paddles.
It is too many, definitely. But maybe I'll try that with a couple of them.
In the original Titanfall, I just had the one paddle, and it was just for kicking. And if I'm playing a racing game like Forza, I usually have one paddle. Well, sometimes I have two paddles, and I use them for changing the gears up and down. Or occasionally I just have one paddle, and I use it for looking behind me, because it's usually the same kind of deal as the whatever the R3 stick push-in is. But the thing I like about Titanfall 2, I mean, you touched on the grappling hook. I actually find that one of the things that makes it better than the original is the slide, because you couldn't slide in the original one, and that gives you a lot more momentum because you can like grapple into a window and then slide across the floor and then wall run for a bit and then grapple and then slide and then grapple. Yeah. It's amazing how much momentum that you get and just can run through a room shooting at people. But the thing I dislike is that the smart pistol is no longer a pistol. It's a power-up that you get temporarily. Because I used to love the smart pistol. Because I'm not very good at aiming.
No, the smart pistol. I definitely like that as well. And I love the grappling hook with the... that you can sort of do the Spider-Man things. You can sort of fire up, grapple onto something, swing or use it to sort of power you across, and then detach and fire another one. That sort of stuff is awesome. And the other weapon that I use is the gravity star. I like and the main reason for I love that is there's been those few occasions where I should record it, because it was just, you know, when it works it's awesome, where someone sort of, you know, I've managed to get myself up on a tower or something. I'm trying to pick off some guy. He's hiding behind this pillar or he's hiding behind this wall. And you can, not all the time, but now and again, I can be accurate enough to sort of drop this thing so it's sort of 2 foot away from him, but in the open. And all of a sudden you see him getting pulled out from behind the wall and sort of hovering in the gravity star. And then you just fire two shots and kill him or whatever. When that works, it's amazing. It's really good fun.
I took an amazing video. I'll dig it out and send it to you after this. I think I tweeted it at the time, where I can't remember what I was doing. I think it was I was just like in the level that's like an office building, and I was going along and I shooting at a Titan and destroyed it, and then the guy ejected, and then I grappled to sort of go near to where he was. And just complete fluke, I grappled him as he ejected out the Titan. So he shot out the Titan, and then I just flew towards him and smacked him. And it was like, I couldn't believe it. It was amazing.
Have you got have, when you have you got a connect? So when you how do you record that? You just say you say record or you hit a button?
No, I used the button. So you
Oh,
just
okay.
double tap on the Xbox logo and then press Y.
And it grabs that whole scene. I haven't done much of that
Yeah,
actually.
it does it for like the last 30 seconds. It'll record. I use it quite a bit. I've used it for quite a few bits in Lego Dimensions, which I play an awful lot. So I just played the Lego Batman movie story pack last week, and there were a few funny bits in that, mainly because they've got I'm really intrigued by the fact that the Lego Batman movie and the game both have Lego Agent Smith from The Matrix, but there's no The Matrix Lego yet. And I have a feeling that it's basically like a clue as to what's coming next in terms of, I imagine it'd probably be a Lego Dimensions thing. I doubt they're going to make Lego sets on The Matrix, but it looks like there might be Lego Dimensions Matrix stuff in the future. So I recorded a clip of that, so I had it. And I also recorded a clip of Robin flopping around in a vent because it amused me greatly. It's
See,
like doing like a little belly crawl across this little vent and like twirling around like he does in the movie. And I was like, oh, that's great. I've got to record that.
that's Lego Dimensions is something I haven't played, and you know, I love Lego and I like playing games. And but I don't
I'm
know.
surprised. Yeah.
Now, but with Lego Dimensions, can I don't necessarily, not that I don't want it, but I don't necessarily want to have to buy all the kits. So do I have to buy all the kits or can I do it all digitally?
No, there's no digital at all.
Oh, right, so you have to
Well,
buy the
okay,
kits.
there's a few different things. So, have you ever played any of like the normal Lego games, like
Yes.
Lego Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff? Okay, so it's essentially that,
Okay.
but with multiple different people, and then there's certain levels. So, with the base pack, you get Gandalf, Wild Style, and Batman, and there's like I think it's 14 levels. Story that you go through that you only need those people for, and
Okay.
works. And then for each of them, you unlock a world. So you get the DC world from Batman, Lord of the Rings world from Gandalf, and Lego Movie world from Wild Style. So you get a lot of content in that base stuff, but then you can add more by buying the physical packs. So for
Okay.
example, some of them just have worlds. So for example, if you drop by a Jurassic World character, then that'll just give you access to the Jurassic world. It's odd to say that. As well as being able to use those characters in any level at any point. So unlike Disney Infinity, like if you were playing like the Toy Story level of Disney Infinity, you could only play it with Toy Story characters. Whereas with Lego Dimensions, you can play with whatever characters you want at any time. There's never any limit on that stuff. So some of the characters you buy will give you a level. So for example, if you buy the Homer Simpsons pack, he comes with a car and like a TV. And when you put him on the pad, that unlocks the Simpsons level. So you get one whole level that's all set in the Simpsons world, but you can play through it with Gandalf and Batman if you want to. But you can also just play it through with Homer. And then you unlock the Simpsons world as well. Whereas if you buy Bart Simpson, he's cheaper because he's just on his own. You just get the Simpsons world, you don't get the level. So you have a level pack rather than the fun pack. And then the final one they have is called a story pack, which is usually for like big film releases. So they've done them for the new Ghostbusters, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and the Lego Batman movie so far. And they come with like a new portal, like built out of Lego that you put on top of your toy pad. And they come with a character and a vehicle of some kind, and then they give you six levels as well as the world you unlock. So you kind of need to buy them to access not some of the content, but it's almost like buying a new game. So, for example, the Lego Batman movie one was like 6 hours long, and It came with two minifigures, a Batmobile, and a whole like bat computer base that you can put on top of your portal to change how it looks completely. So you get an awful lot of stuff there for 30 quid. So you get like the game and some Lego basically, and 6 hours of gameplay. But then you can use those characters in any world you want. So like if I go and play through the Ghostbusters one, I can go through
Very
it
cool.
as Robin. I can play it's like Lumpy Space Princess from Adventure Time, the Wicked Witch of the West, and Homer Simpson just going around like the Scooby-Doo level or something. It's crazy.
All doing their own voices, and you're using their capabilities and everything. That's
So
kind
there
of
are
cool.
some bits that you can only access with certain characters. So like if you want to get every gold brick, there's something like 4,000 in the game because there's so much content that you can unlock. So like in the Batman level, there's like 10 bricks to collect, and you'll only be able to get like one or two with Robin and Batgirl that you get with it. Like some of them you need other characters, like you might need Mr. T from the A-Team to use like the A-Team build thing.
Right.
And so for those situations, you can either use the character if you have them, or you can do what they call rent a hero, where you can use some of your studs and you get them for 30 seconds. So you sort of can play with them just for a little bit to kind of test it out, but also just to unlock to get like a
That's
certain
cool.
thing. So that's kind of cool. But no, it's really good. It's a really interesting system. I mean, I like it. I mean, I like the collectible minifigures and stuff anyway. But one of the interesting things is that the vehicles, every vehicle has three different builds. So like the Batmobile, you have it and you can just drive around in it in the game. But then if you upgrade it with studs in the game, you can convert it like into the Batwing. And
Oh,
then not only
wow.
does it change in the game, but you can physically, with the same bricks, they give you different instructions, so you disassemble it and then you can rebuild it as a Batwing.
Oh, that's cool.
So every vehicle has three different types, and some of them are amazing that they've managed to get it to work that way. Some of them aren't as great, but a lot of them are really, really good. So
That's
yes,
very cool.
yeah, really interesting game.
I
I'm
might try.
surprised you haven't tried it yet.
I know, I know. I think it was just because of the having. Oh yeah, I do like Lego and everything, but it's just space and everything, and building things and getting everything set up and stuff. But I guess I could try getting a base pack and see what it's like, actually. It sounds quite cool.
You need the starter pack is the same for everyone. I think
Okay.
it is expensive, the starter pack. I think it's like 100 quid. I mean,
Right.
you could probably get it cheaper now because
Yeah.
you get like a full what would retail for £60 as a game, and then you get the toy pad, and then you get three characters in a vehicle. So it's
Right.
quite a lot of stuff. But once you've got that, then you can just buy other little packs and put stuff in. But it's amazing just the number of properties they've got in it. I think there's 30 in there now. So you've got like all the things you would expect from previous things that Lego have done. So you've got like Harry Potter's in there, Lord of the Rings, Batman, obviously the Lego movie, those kinds of things. But then they've got stuff that's completely different that's never been done in Lego, like, well, it has now, I guess, but like Doctor Who, Adventure Time, the A-Team,
Yeah.
Gremlins, Beetlejuice is coming, Knight
Wow.
Rider just came out last week.
Knight Rider.
Knight Rider, you can
Awesome.
get Michael Knight and Kit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Scooby-Doo, so I always take the Mystery Machine, whatever levels I play on.
That's
And the cool
awesome.
thing is, when you go into like some of the levels, like The Simpsons, Scooby-Doo, and Adventure Time are obviously cartoons. When you're in those worlds, it's all rendered like a cartoon. And then even if
Oh,
you put like
wow.
a character like Mr. T in, he's not rendered as a minifigure, he's like a cartoon minifigure. It's really weird.
No way.
Like
That's
Sonic the
very
Hedgehog's
clever.
in there. There's loads of stuff. It's crazy like how they've managed to get so many things to mix together. But then there are notable things that are missing, like Pirates of the Caribbean isn't in there yet.
Yeah.
No Disney stuff, obviously, because it's they had Disney Infinity. So there's
Of
no Star
course.
Wars, which is a big one for Lego, obviously, because like Lego
That would
Star
be.
Wars is the thing that saved them from bankruptcy, pretty much.
Yes, that would be cool.
So that's not in there.
And
But I
there's
have
also,
it might be.
I'm guessing there's things like, because Transformers springs to mind, Star Trek, but I know there's Mega Bloks or whatever it is that have got licenses for those. Maybe not Mega Bloks, but there's another, I can't remember, there's another building set that's a Lego clone that do Transformer ones and Star Trek. So I wonder whether
See,
it's a licensing.
they used to have the rights to Doctor Who, and then as soon as that went, then the Lego Ideas project for Doctor Who got approved, and then the Dimension set came out.
Yeah,
And this
exactly.
the really cool thing about it, I wrote a piece on it a couple of weeks ago, is that they have like all the proper voice actors for a lot of it. So like for Doctor Who, they got Peter Capaldi to come in and record like all new lines and stuff. And so they actually have his voice as the Lego Doctor Who. And then once you've completed the level, you can actually regenerate through all of the other doctors, including John Hurt's War Doctor.
Oh,
And then
wow.
use audio from the films, from the TV show, sorry. So you can literally run around as William Hartnell and he's talking like with clips from the original thing. So you can like play like Adventure Time as William Hartnell. It's like,
Is
what?
bizarre.
And he even has
I
all the
need to
different
try that.
TARDISes as well. Like you can go in every TARDIS. And so if you go in William Hartnell's one, it's all black and white, but built of Lego.
That's very, I
But
need to try
proper
that,
Doctor Who
yeah.
music and stuff. Oh, it's great. You definitely need to get the starter pack and the Doctor Who pack,
Yeah,
and then
definitely, yeah. The Doctor
use
Who one sounds awesome, and the Knight Rider one sounds cool as well. And
Yeah, the Knight Rider one's a shame because you don't get a level with that. You literally just get access to like a Knight Rider world and the
right.
character. And those ones, I'm always like, eh. Whereas the Doctor Who one, you get like a full level as well. So you get like a 1.5 hour, 2 hour typical Lego game experience with it, as well as all the other stuff.
Yeah. So when the Switch comes out, because you've pre-ordered the Switch, is that March?
Yeah, it's a week on Friday.
And
I'm
is
very
that
excited.
for the sort of games that's coming out for that, is stuff like Lego Dimensions or are games like that going to be the norm, or is it more the Nintendo Zelda and all those sort of, Mario and the typical games?
So the
Yeah,
problem with
it's
stuff
I
like
guess it's it, what I'm saying is this Switch, because it's a combo type thing, isn't it? It's a tablet, you plug it into the dock and it becomes a console for the TV. So is it going to be like an Xbox, PS4 style quality, speed, performance, everything?
No, it's much more like iOS, tvOS.
Right.
It's essentially an Android device, and it's a NVIDIA Tegra chip inside of it. I mean, it looks great. The tablet portion of it is basically a 720p screen,
Right.
and it looks a decent screen. Like, it's probably not going to be like as nice as a wide color gamut P3 iPhone display, but then it's a quarter of the price of an iPhone or an iPad, so it's not going to be. But you've got 720p resolution there, and then when you put it in like its docked mode, you get 1080p, although not all games will render at 1080p in the same way like Xbox One games are actually 900p and then upscaled. There's very few games that actually run at native 1080p. But
Right.
the graphic side of it, I mean, it's definitely more your cartoony stuff. So like if you play Mario Kart 8 on the Switch when that comes out, then that'll be 1080p at 60 frames a second because it's quite cartoony. Whereas the Zelda game is like 900p at 30 frames a second,
Right.
because it's like a Wii U port that's been done a bit dodgily by the looks of it. So you're not going to get stuff like your Call of Duty and Titanfall 2, that they're just not going to appear on the Switch because
Right.
it's not powerful enough to do those, and it'll be done like a different thing. What you will get is a lot of like indie games that you get on PC, and on iOS in many ways. Like if you think about the iPad, I listened to a podcast called Remastered, which has got Federico Vaticci, the guy from Mac Stories. And he did a thing on that recently about the iPad and how there's very few games that are just for iPad, as in like iPad exclusive. They tend to be Steam games that have then been ported to iPad. So things like FTL, Faster Than Light, or there's a few others coming up as well. I can't think of any off the top of my head. But the Switch is probably going to be more like that you're going to have like indie games and like smaller things.
Right.
And your big name stuff is going to be Nintendo. So it's going to be Zelda, Mario. Those are the two big things this year. So Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild comes out on launch date. And it's going to be a massive open world. It looks amazing. It's very different to the previous ones in the series. It's more like a cross between Zelda and The Witcher. It's very interesting. And then Super Mario Odyssey comes out at Christmas and is like the big 3D Mario title, probably the first one since Super Mario Galaxy 2 on the Wii. So it's been a long time coming. So they're going to be like the big games and the reason to buy the Switch. Like you wouldn't, it's not going to replace an Xbox One or a
Yeah.
PlayStation 4. Certainly not going to replace a PC. But it is a very interesting device because you can take it around with you. It's certainly better than playing games on the iPhone or iPad, I would say, because you know, if for example, Sonic Mania is a good game as an example. So Sonic Mania is a 25th anniversary edition special thing, where it's basically a remake of the original. Well, it's not a remake. It's a new Sonic the Hedgehog game built in the style of the 16-bit Mega Drive games.
Right.
So it follows on like from Sonic 3 and Knuckles, basically. And it's been designed by indie developers who loved Sonic the Hedgehog, like Christian Whitehead, the guy that ported it to iOS and Apple TV by building his own game engine that closely mimicked the original and making it look like the original, but it's not an emulator. So they got him to build this new game, Sonic Mania, which looks incredible. And that's coming out on, that'll be on iOS, I'm sure, Apple TV, PC, and it'll be on the Switch. And so I was looking at it and thinking, where would I buy this? Would I buy it on the PC? Because then I get, you know, my nice high resolution screen and look nice. I get Steam achievements and stuff. Do I get it on iOS so I can play it on the go? Or do I get it on the Switch when I can do both, where I can basically sit in bed and play it as a handheld, like an iPad, with physical proper controls rather than having to use a controller like separately and balance the iPad precariously, yeah, or worse, using touchscreen controls. And then I can sit down in my living room and plug it in and then play it at 1080p, sat on the sofa with it on the screen like you would a normal console. So it's going to be great for those kinds of things, like your, you know, £15-20 indie title games rather than your big Xbox games.
Yeah, and I do like, I mean, it looks quite an interesting device. I love the whole the sort of joystick approach, where you've got when you're playing it at home or whatever, or you want to play it with a proper controller, you've got like that sort of clip that you put the two controllers onto, and you've got like a normal handheld controller. You can also stick it on each side of the device and use it a bit like some of those wide gaming tablet things that I've got one of, that sort of stream stuff from your Xbox. But what I really loved was that you could actually then detach those two controllers and two people could use a controller each, which looks really cool. So it's very cleverly done.
Yeah, it's a very interesting device. It looks like it's sold out at the moment, but they're only making like 2 million to start with. Because, I mean, they only really announced it very, very close to the launch. I mean, it was fully revealed in January.
Yeah.
And it's coming out March 3rd. So they've not had much time to ramp up production, you know, without like all the leaks and stuff. So there's going to be... part of me thinks it might also be marketing, like they're trying to get like that Apple buzz of, you know, we have limited supply, so they're going to have like queues down the street of people trying to get iPhones, that kind of stuff. So that might be a part of it as well. But I would expect when they do like an announcement the day or the weekend after the launch, they'll be like, oh, it's completely sold out. Isn't it amazing? 2 million units sold. And it's nothing compared to like, you know, an iPad or something. Apple is selling far more iPads and phones than Nintendo are selling Switches. But it's not a complete flop like the Wii U. Although it's odd because like its game lineup is so small. Like on launch day, there's like first party games. You've got Zelda and you've got this thing called 1-2 Switch, which is like a thing to show how to use the controllers. It's kind of like Wii Sports, but you have to pay for it, and it's 50 quid, so that can fuck right off personally.
Yeah.
you can like milk a cow and stuff with it, and it looks awful. But it's like a fun party game type thing where you can do stuff with the controllers. So there's those two from Nintendo, and that's it. And then you've got like Just Dance. I think Skylanders is going to be on there on launch day. Super Bomberman R, which sounds like it should be like a £10 game and is 50 quid. And then a few indie titles, although I just saw earlier on one of them has been delayed. So in total, there'll be about 10 games that you can get on launch. The Wii U launch was something like 28, I want to say. And like the PS4 and Xbox launch were like 50 or something. So it's not great in terms of lineup, but to be honest, most people that are buying it on day one are buying it to play Zelda on day one.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I like the, I do like the idea. It's that whole thing of, you know, I've got my Xbox One in the office, and I could put it in the house, and I could, if Hannah would let me, but I could, it takes up another space underneath the TV, but I could put it in the house. But I like that concept of, you know, I guess I could have an Xbox One in the house and Xbox One in the office. It starts getting expensive doing that, but you know, it's possible. But I do like that idea of. Like you were saying, you know, you could have your dock upstairs, you could have a dock downstairs. You just pick it up, you know, walk upstairs, slot in the dock up there, you continue playing the game you're playing on the 1080p or whatever. That's,
well, you don't even need to put a dock upstairs, you just sit in bed and play
it. Sit in bed with it, yeah, exactly, yeah. Or that thing where, you know, you're sitting in the room, like if I took my Xbox One in and I wanted to play a game, well, I can't play a game because someone's watching TV or whatever, you know, that's that done. Whereas this is, well, actually, I want to play a game, I can just pick it up and sit on the sofa and plug some headphones in or whatever and play.
It's like with the Wii U had an almost similar thing where if you had the big gamepad, it had a screen on it. And some games like Mario Kart's a good example. By default, it would play on the screen, and then on the handheld portion that's your controller, it'd have like the map or something like that.
Right.
So it's like a second screen experience, which, you know, it's fine. And it wasn't a very high resolution screen, and it was a bit shitty, but it was all right. But then what you could do is press a button and then switch the things around so that you could then basically play the game on the handheld.
Oh.
So then quite often if I was like playing it and then my wife's like, oh, my program's on now, I'd be like, oh yeah, sure. I just switch the channel on the TV and I continue playing it, sat on the sofa next to it on the Wii U gamepad, just at a smaller, you know, little small screen. So it's like playing a mobile thing. The only problem with that is that you were tethered via like
Bluetooth
proprietary thing to the thing, which was fine. It was always okay if you were in the same room, but you couldn't like, I couldn't go upstairs and continue playing it in bed or something. It'd be like, no, connection's not good enough. But obviously with the Switch, the dock doesn't have anything in it. I mean, it's literally got a HDMI port on it, and you just drop the whole tablet into it.
Right.
So in that scenario, if I'm sat playing something on the TV and she wants to watch something, then I just have to get up, attach my Joy-Con controllers, stick them onto the side of it, and then I can sit and play it as a tablet. But then I can go wherever I want. I can go, you know, 1,000 miles away, and it'll still work. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
It'd be nice to things like flights and stuff as well. Like I can see myself sat on a plane just playing, you know, Zelda or something, like playing a decent meaty game, the kind of thing that you just don't get on the iPad. Or if you do, you know, it's more of a mobile game, really. Like even something like I was saying earlier, what's it called? Oceanhorn. It still feels to me like I'm playing a Game Boy game that's been blown up.
Yeah. And it's also not going to, it's also not an official, it's not like you're going to get Zelda on an iPad or something, maybe not yet, but or ever. So it's like if you want to play those proper, you know, proper games that you've grown up with and you've played in the past, and that's the one you want to play, you've either got to play a copy on the iPad or go with something like this.
But it's also just, I mean, a sense of scale. I mean, no one is doing something the size of Zelda Breath of the Wild or Mario Odyssey. Even a knockoff, there's just nothing like that big or that graphically rich on the iPad. There could be, but there's just no money in it because people aren't going to pay 60 quid for a game on the iPad.
Exactly.
So you don't get, you know, 60, 70 hour long games on the iPad. You get 4 hour games that also work on the iPhone because that's what people want, and they're free and they're full of shit. So,
and I guess
it's very different.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Amazon. I'm just looking at the sort of games list on Amazon, and obviously they're billed the way they're listed on Amazon as with boxes and everything, but it says download code. So it is all digital delivery.
It's not all, no. So you can buy physical versions of the games, and they actually come on cards. Like,
oh, wow.
Obviously, like the Wii U and the Wii had CDs. This has gone like back to like the 3DS style of it's like a little physical cartridge that you stick in, which is kind of cool. It makes it much quicker because obviously you can't have a spinning disc if you're carrying it around.
Yeah.
But you can also download games to it, the same as you can on the Wii U. You could always buy them on disc or download them. But it's only got 32 gigs of internal storage, of which 6 gigs is used up by the OS. So you have to get like SD cards basically.
Oh, and it supports that. That's cool. Okay.
SD cards. So like Dragon Quest, is it Dragon Quest? I think it's called Dragon Quest. Is a game that is 32 gigabytes in size. So you have to you it literally says on the eStore, you will need to buy an SD card to play this game on your Switch
Wow.
because it just won't download because it's too big.
And
So there's like little teething issues like that.
the cartridges they use, are they proprietary or are they like SD based or something?
Yeah, proprietary.
Okay. That's
But
interesting.
they're small though. I mean, they're about the size of a PS Vita one, but slightly fatter. So they're much smaller than the 3DS game cards. I mean, they are very small, very, very small indeed.
And
So it's interesting.
what's the battery life like? Do you know yet?
I think they said it depends on the game.
Right.
For like basically an indie title or something, you're probably going to get 5 hours. For Zelda, it's going to be more like three, which is fair enough because it's generating. I mean, the graphics are a lot more intensive on something like that.
Yeah.
So it's
That
not. I
sounds
mean,
interesting.
it's not iPad levels of. Well, having said that, I mean, I always think like an iPad's 10 hours, but I guess it's not because if you're playing games, it's significantly less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry, my my Bluetooth headphones just ran out of power. So
Oh,
now you're coming out of the speakers. So if,
okay. Well,
two sec. Well, we can probably wrap up to be
yeah,
fair.
we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to be hearing reverb through the microphone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think technology has dictated that we end it now, which is, yeah, close to 2 hours. It's pretty good. So I'll talk to you next time.
Awesome. Speak to you later, Jason.
Cheers. Thanks.